the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The Treaty for the People, was written by Erwin Gonchak.
These were the words of Winston Churchill, broadcast to the world on August 24, 1941. Since the Mongol invasions of Europe in the 16th century, there has never been methodical, merciless butchery on such a scale or approaching such a scale. And this is but the beginning. Famine and pestilence have yet to follow in the bloody ruts of Hitler's tanks. We are in the presence of a crime without a name. This is the story of Raphael Lemkin, who gave the name of genocide to the planned murder of whole peoples, and who devoted his life to its prevention and punishment. Raphael Lemkin was deeply concerned with a great personal and world tragedy, and the mission he tried to perform is still unfinished. But he made a beginning, and it is of this beginning that we tell. In the early part of the century, the Lemkin family lived in Bozwedynia, a town in eastern Poland. Young Raphael was a studious boy and spent a good part of the day in the family library.
Mother, in this book I read, Carthage turned into blackened ruins by the Roman legions. And look here, on this page it says, the fall of Judea to Rome, thousands massacred. And here, the Tatar invasions of Europe, millions slaughtered. The persecution of Huguenots, 50,000 killed, 30,000 Catholics wiped out in Japan. Why? Why is this permitted? Mother, how can this be? Throughout history, these crimes have been committed. If there are laws against murder, are there no laws against mass murder?
Raphael, there are all kinds of laws.
Then something must be wrong with the laws, because they have not been very effective.
Oh, my son, you are young. You have much to learn about this world.
Raphael Lemkin enrolled in the University of Lvov. He became a student of languages: Polish, Russian, French, German, Hebrew, Arabic, Sanskrit. Perhaps he thought that languages would provide him with the key to understanding different peoples and the way they behaved. But he learned that this was not enough.
Lemkin, calm down. Calm down.
Professor, how can I? Didn't you read the papers today?
All right, tell me. What did you read?
This trial in Berlin of the young Armenian who killed a Turkish police officer.
So? Why should that get you excited?
Professor, let me give you the background. Then you will understand how I feel.
I'm listening, Lemkin.
In 1915, under the leadership of this police chief, the Turks massacred over a million Armenians. The young Armenian was spared only because his mother's body had fallen on him and hidden him. 6 years later, the Armenian youth saw the Turkish police chief on the streets of Berlin. He took out a gun and killed him. Now they are trying the Armenian for murder.
Of course. What did you expect?
But what of the police chief who helped to kill a million Armenians? Why wasn't he tried for murder?
Lemkin, you don't understand. This is an internal Turkish matter. Other nations cannot interfere. When you interfere with the internal affairs of another country, you infringe upon that country's sovereignty.
Professor, so it is a crime for the Armenian to strike down the Turkish police chief, but it is not a crime for the police chief to have struck down a million people. No, sir. If this is the law of nations, I'm afraid that I will never understand.
Dearest mother, my work at the university is progressing very well.
However, I have decided to change the direction of my studies. I've dropped a few of my language courses, and I now will devote much of my time to an investigation of domestic and international law.
Raphael, your mother has a hard time keeping up with your new titles and professions. Master of Languages, Doctor of Philosophy, Lawyer...
You can add one more, Mother. Public Prosecutor of Warsaw.
So tell your old mother what that means.
It means that I am finally learning at first hand how laws operate. And maybe now I can do something about them.
Always remember, Raphael, it is moral power that counts.
Yes, Mother. But when moral power is embodied in law, it can count for more. My work has taught me an important lesson. Law must be shaped and administered not so much to punish the individual as to protect society.
As public prosecutor, Lemkin wrote many articles concerning his philosophy on the role of law in society. His writings were influential in changing the basic penal code for Poland. But his boyhood concern about the mass murder of people still remained with him. Some years later, in 1933, when he was to be sent as the Polish representative to a League of Nations conference on international law, he decided to do something about the matter.
Lemkin, as your friend and former teacher, please, I urge you not to make your proposal to the conference in Madrid.
And why is that, Professor? Do you think I will interfere with their internal equanimity?
I warn you, Lemkin, they will laugh in your face. Remember, these are hardened lawyers and statesmen you're addressing, not starry-eyed college students.
Thank you, my friend, but my mind is made up. Someone must speak on this issue.
In our lifetime, we have seen the Turks massacre the Armenians and the Iraqis slaughter the Christian Assyrians. Today, there are signs indicating the beginnings of similar and perhaps more systematically executed crimes against humanity. Therefore, I propose that this conference add two new crimes to the International Penal Code, namely, the crime of barbarity, conceived as oppressive and destructive action directed against individuals as members of a national, religious, or racial group, and the crime of vandalism, dealing with the malicious destruction of works of art and culture, because they represent the specific creations of the genius of such groups.
Well, Lemkin, how did the conference go?
Professor, you were wrong. They did not laugh in my face. They simply were bored.
I suppose that is worse.
I also heard from my supervisor at the prosecutor's office.
Yes? He asked if I'd read the newspaper characterization of my proposals.
Fool. Fanatic. Dreamer. And then he came to the real reason for the interview. The Nazis.
Ah, so they too are concerned.
Poland, he told me, is trying to maintain good relations with the new Nazi government in Germany. And the Nazis let it be known through diplomatic channels that they thought my proposals were directed against their internal domestic policies, which of course means their treatment of the Jews.
So, what did he want you to do?
What else? Resign my post as public prosecutor. But, Professor, I told him this. The government in Berlin is not a government with which good relations will mean anything.
Raphael Lemkin retired to private practice, but he used all available personal funds and time in writing about the crime of barbarity, making speeches, traveling to many international conferences in Europe. But the statesman was still bored. Hitler invaded Poland, and World War II was on. Dr. Lemkin never heard from his family again. He was wounded in the leg in guerrilla fighting outside Warsaw and remained in hiding in the Polish forests for 6 months before making his escape by way of Lithuania and the Baltic Sea to Sweden. There he received a teaching appointment at a university. But the atrocities of the Hitler regime were much on his mind, and he decided to go to the Swedish government for the purpose of presenting to them a plan he had long been considering.
I want to ask the help of your government in collecting German documents relating to the rule of conquered peoples. Sweden has embassies in all these countries.
I see. Specifically, what purpose do you have in mind?
Sir, I pray the day will shortly come when a record of this kind, documentary evidence of the Nazi rule written by the Nazis themselves, will serve a useful purpose in bringing these criminals to the bar of international justice.
With great diligence, Raphael Lemkin went about his self-appointed task of compiling and analyzing Nazi decrees from the occupied countries. The pattern of barbarity was as clear as it was appalling.
Thank you, Dr. Lemkin, for your talk on Nazi methods and goals. We should like to ask you a few questions. First, you often speak of the crimes of the German people. Is it not true that this is the work of only a small number of sick individuals? Many facts speak for the responsibility of the German people in entirety. The present destruction of Europe would not be as complete and thorough had the German people not freely accepted the Nazi plan, participated voluntarily in its execution, and up to this point, profited greatly therefrom. But Hitler is a demonic brute. Perhaps he has terrified the people into doing his bidding.
My friends, the German techniques of exploitation of the subjugated nations are so numerous, so thoughtful and elaborate, and are so greatly dependent upon personal skill and responsibility, that this complex machinery could not have been successful without widespread devotion to the cause of the persons in control.
Lemkin was invited to come to America and teach at a number of universities. Here, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace contacted him to do a volume based on his collection of Nazi documents. It was in this book that the word genocide was used for the first time. The Greek word genos, clan or religious group, was joined to the Latin side or killing. Hitler's crimes now had a name.
Come in, please. Dr. Lemkin, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Justice Jackson, for inviting me.
I'd like your assistance in a special project I'm now working on in conjunction with the War Department.
Yes, sir?
It's this. The war in Europe is coming to an end. High-ranking Nazis are falling into our hands every day. We're planning, with our allies, to try these individuals for the crimes they've committed. I believe that the documents you've compiled, and your knowledge of them, can be of great help to us.
Justice Jackson, it is vital for the Nuremberg trials to establish once and for all that genocide is an international crime against humanity and punishable by the Society of Nations.
Dr. Lemkin, I fully agree with you, and I'll try to make it a part of the indictment. But we must be realistic. The International Military Tribunal will undoubtedly consider this to be outside their jurisdiction. I'm afraid that you'll have to look for another forum in order to get your principle established in international law.
Genocide did not become part of the Nuremberg record. Dr. Lemkin once again made the rounds of the international legal conferences.
Cultural considerations speak for international protection of national, religious, and racial groups. Our whole cultural heritage is a product of the contributions of all nations. We can best understand how impoverished our culture would be if the peoples doomed by Germany, such as the Jews, had not been permitted to receive the inspiration to create the Bible or to give birth to an Einstein. If the Poles had not the opportunity to give to the world a Copernicus, a Chopin, a Curie, the Czechs, a Hus, a Dvorak, the Greeks, a Plato and a Socrates, the Russians, a Tolstoy and a Shostakovich.
One last hope remained. The United Nations were going to hold their first regular meeting at Lake Success in New York. On the boat back to America, Lemkin drew up a resolution for the study of a genocide convention. But he had only 5 days to persuade an official delegation to place it on the agenda.
Ambassador, it would be impractical to treat genocide as a national crime, since by its very nature it is committed by the state or by powerful groups which have the backing of the state. A state will never prosecute a crime instigated or backed by itself. By its very legal, moral, and humanitarian nature, it must be considered an international crime.
Yes, Dr. Lemkin was told, the United States delegation would support the resolution, providing someone else would sponsor it. The British and French said the same. He decided his best chance was to approach smaller countries.
Dr. Alfaro, large countries can defend themselves by arms. Small countries like Panama need the protection of the laws.
Panama agreed to sponsor the resolution.
Sir, for an idea of how important genocide can be, more Jews were destroyed by genocide than there are people in all of Cuba.
The Cubans became a co-sponsor.
Action against genocide is definitely within the Indian tradition. Gandhi's message to the world is, in essence, the sanctity of all life.
The Indians joined the Panamanians and the Cubans. Genocide was on the agenda. Within the next few weeks, Dr. Lemkin personally interviewed the delegations of all the member nations and also compiled special materials to be sent to them. One day, Dr. Lemkin was called before Jan Masaryk, the leader of Czechoslovakia, when Czechoslovakia was a democracy.
Come in, Dr. Lemkin.
Thank you, Mr. Masaryk. Frankly, I have come to ask a favor of you.
Lemkin, don't worry. You have Czechoslovakia's vote. In fact, I would vote a dozen times for your resolution if I could.
I know, sir, but I'm worried about the Soviet Union. Vyshinsky attacked my ideas back in 1935. And now Gromyko opposed putting genocide on the assembly agenda.
It is difficult to figure out the Russians.
As a student, I knew your father, Tomáš Masaryk, when he was fighting to found the new Czechoslovakia. It is too bad that he is not alive. He would be a great fighter for this idea of preserving national culture.
I agree with you, Dr. Lim.
Please, Mr. Masaryk, speak to the Russians. Tell them that some good things come from the West. For example, tell them that penicillin is not an intrigue against the Soviet Union. And neither is this resolution against genocide.
On December 11th, 1946, The General Assembly unanimously agreed that genocide was an international crime, and that the United Nations should draw up a treaty providing for its prevention and punishment. But obstacles still remain.
President Arana, this is Lemkin. Listen, I've heard there are members working behind the scenes to have the genocide deliberations called premature. Yes, premature. Sir, you must tell them this treaty is already 2,000 years late.
And then there was talk that the genocide treaty should be added to the one on human rights.
Ambassador, I implore you not to do this. I can foresee that it will only cause confusion and delay. The world has waited too long. Now, I agree, human rights are vital. But first, we must make existence safe. And then we can work to improve it.
On the afternoon of December 9, 1948, the General Assembly finally came to the vote on the Genocide Treaty. Before the meeting, Dr. Herbert Evatt of Australia, the President of the Assembly, greeted Dr. Lemkin and shook his hand. He said, "You are a great fighter, and we will help you win." The vote was 55-0 in favor of the Convention of Genocide. All that was now needed was the ratification of 20 nations to make it part of international law. With his remaining savings, Dr. Lemkin decided to tour the world to urge acceptance for what he called the Treaty for the People. But first, it was necessary for him to spend 6 weeks in the hospital. The strain of pushing the treaty to completion was beginning to take its toll on him.
Nurse, please, later I will rest, but now please, a paper and pencil. Gentlemen, I think it would be an inspiration to the world if the United States Senate showed the way and ratified the convention first. It is unbelievable, but some people still think that Dachau, Auschwitz, Buchenwald are manufactured war propaganda. This convention must become a living force in world society.
But in spite of the favorable recommendation of President Truman, the Senate shelved the proposal. Dr. Lemkin heard the same arguments that he had heard from his old professor 3 decades ago.
Lemkin, you don't understand. When you interfere with the internal affairs of another country, you infringe on that country's sovereignty.
No, I'm afraid that I will never understand. How can a treaty not to murder be a threat to any nation's independence?
The United States is among the countries whose ratification is still to come. But to date, 60 nations have signed the Treaty for the People, and the crime of genocide is now part of international law. To accomplish this feat, Raphael Lemkin carried no official credentials other than the silent pleas of the unnumbered dead. One paper recently wrote, "The burden of his days was spent in a crusade against slavery, degradation, and murder. It was a heavy burden, and on August 30th, 1959, it killed him at the age of 58. His mission was never completed, for the cry of genocide is still heard in our day from different parts of the world. But a beginning was made." If
you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling, to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Max D. Davidson of Perth Amboy, New Jersey, spiritual leader of Congregation Ben Mordecai in Perth Amboy, and president of the Synagogue Council of America.
Thank you. The public opinion of the world has outlawed murder as an instrument of private vengeance, but it has not yet rejected mass murder as an instrument of national policy. Our sympathy is awakened when we're informed of floods and their victims, typhoons, volcanoes, a famine, of epidemic disease. American generosity rushes to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to heal the sick. What happens when we learn of whole populations being wiped out deliberately? Men, women, and children being led to innocent and martyred death. Which represents our human index? Hiroshima or Fujiyama? Belsen or Vesuvius? The lessons taught by Lemkin, the branding of genocide as evil, as repulsive to the human heart of a mature mankind, is founded on the law, the learning, and the logic of the Jewish tradition. In the planned society of our generation, can we not plan progress in the pattern of prophecy? In the contest for the minds of men, against the background of the war of words and ideas, there is a spiritual search for common kindness and civilized compassion. What will move those minds more profoundly? What will quicken hearts more directly than the resolution of the nations, and particularly the determination of the United States of America to protect the homes and the hope and the happy security of the innocent millions? We have the means of destroying not a city alone, but whole provinces, whole states, entire races. And we have the means of saving provinces and states and races. The impartial cruelty of war is grievous enough. The cold, calculated criminal havoc of race ruin, of national annihilation, of genocide, cannot, must not win its contest with the awakened conscience of mankind, which looks to the day when every man will sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make him afraid.
Thank you, Rabbi Davidson. Our Eternal Light drama today, Treaty for the People, was written by Erwin Gonchak. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Ralph Bell was featured as Raphael Lemkin. Others in the cast were Guy Repp, Dean Lyman Omquist, Larry Robinson, Amy Siddell, Guy Sorrell, and Philip Sterling. This is Vic Roby. Our program was directed by George Voutsas. Presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.